This is Audible.
Wet, Part 1. Written by S. Jackson Rivera. Narrated by Lara Asmussen. Chapter 1. Reese had been nervous since Mrs. Michaels helped her book this trip to the Caribbean, but as soon as she saw the sign, Paradise Divers, she felt butterflies in her stomach, or maybe something more like pterodactyls. She stopped for a second to remind herself of her goal, took a deep breath, and timidly turned the corner, thinking the dive shop would be right there. To her dismay, a long, narrow walkway loomed before her, a walkway over the water, the ocean. Only 25 feet left to go, but she was sure it was the hardest part of her journey. Secretly terrified of the ocean, she wanted to kick herself for getting into such a scary situation. She thought about turning right around and heading back home. The water sparkled on both sides of the narrow walkway, and she thought how embarrassing it would be if she fell in. She had no reason to believe she would. She wasn't clumsy by any means, but her imagination worked overtime to come up with random mishaps to worry about, as if she didn't worry enough already. The shop sat on a large deck on stilts, entirely over the water, a crude construction like almost every building she'd seen since getting off the plane. The islanders appeared to have an aversion to paint. The platform stretched about 15 yards wide and 30 yards long, the long building positioned in the center. The water lapped against the land only inches beneath the narrow boardwalk where she stood, while sloping deeper as the deck's length stretched farther out into the bay. The roof of the building extended to the platform edge on both sides of the building, providing shade to the 6 feet of walkway on either side. Reese guessed that the people sitting under the awning, enjoying each other's company, were trying to avoid the hot sun. She took a deep breath and stepped onto the boardwalk, pulling her huge wheeled bag behind her. It reminded her of walking the plank, which sent her nerves into overdrive. Pirates holding swords to her back came to mind. The 8 people at the other end wore nothing but swimming suits, and they stared, watching her drag her duffel, its wheels clanking noisily across the uneven wooden planks. She said a quick prayer that she wouldn't fall into the ocean, even if it wasn't very deep here. "I'm looking for Paul Weaver," she said when she reached the people who'd watched her cross the boardwalk. "Just like every other woman," someone said quietly, and the others broke into a round of laughter. "He's in the office." Reese looked down the length of the building and gestured to the 3 doors along the outer corridor. "And the office is?" she asked with an inquiring expression. One of the shade seekers pointed to the door behind her. Paul waited in his office for the printer to spit out the report he needed so his office duties could finally be done for the day. He hated being cooped up inside, doing tedious paperwork, when he preferred to be out in the sun. As he waited, he looked out the window and noticed her come around the corner. He squinted, straining to get a better look through the sea salt spotted glass, and approved of what he saw. His heart knocked a little harder against his chest. Unusual, but he assured himself it was just the anticipation of another paying student. Most of the people who came to the island were European backpackers, young people headed out to travel the world while they waited for the transition from teenager to adulthood. By the time they reached the island, most usually looked a little worse for wear. She was different. The girl was cute enough, shapely, not a supermodel, but something about her made him stare. He watched her cross the plank, as they called the long wooden walkway, trying to figure out what it was. Her long golden brown hair, still shiny and smooth, the humidity obviously hadn't had enough time to do its work on her yet, fell to just above her breasts, curling around, as if pointing to them, saying, "Look." And he did. His eyes widened with approval. It was more than just her pleasing body, though he never did pinpoint what. She wore a floral orange smock with white shorts, not unusual attire for the tropics, but even after traveling all day, she looked put together. Maybe it was the shoes, bronze sandals with a 2-inch heel. None of the girls on the island wore anything but flip-flops. She made him smile. I think your dreams are about to come true, Claire. Claire grunted to let him know she didn't want to be bothered with chit-chat. It appears a member of the royal family is about to pay us a visit. That caught the British Claire's attention. She looked up from her computer. What? He chuckled. I think our new student has arrived. Rhys left her bag outside the door and walked into the small office, her nerves still raw. It didn't surprise her to see everything indoors made from the same crude wooden planks she'd seen outside, except for the white counter in front of her, the only thing she'd seen at the shop so far adorned with paint. Behind the counter, a computer sat to the right on a wide shelf that served as a desk. The shelf ran all the way around the small room. A woman sat at another computer against the back wall, the only window in the office directly above her head. Shelves covered every possible spot on the wall, and each shelf looked ready to break from the weight of all the clutter that had been stuffed onto it. Messy and unorganized, the office didn't sit well with Rhys and her tidy little world. The wolf huffed and he puffed and he blew the house made of wooden planks down. The thought made her smile. The man behind the counter returned her smile, giving her the impression that he thought she'd smiled because of him. Hey, he extended his hand across the counter. I'm Paul. He continued to smile without taking his eyes off her. She glanced away from his gesture, pretending not to notice he wanted to shake hands. Williams. He put his finger on a paper attached to a clipboard, pointing to her name, but didn't look at it, because he was still looking at her. Danaria, right? He'd pronounced her name Danaria, and she cringed. Too many people tried to pronounce her name like the common stomach disorder. She took a deep breath and exhaled before answering, Danaria, but please, call me Rhys. Danaria? He said it right. Such an unusual, pretty name. I've never heard it before. Thank you. And, yeah, my parents combined their mother's names, coming up with a name so unusual and weird, no one can pronounce it. Why Rhys? Middle name? He seemed so interested, the way his eyes bore into hers. No. I think Danaria was too weird to match up with a middle name. I don't have one. When I was little, I couldn't even say my name. Apparently, I called myself Habarys for years. Rhys stuck. She'd told the story so many times. Paul had rested his folded arms on the counter, staring at her with the same smile. It took him a second to respond, making her squirm a little. It's good to finally put a face to the email, Rhys. His smile changed. Only one side of his mouth curved up now. I'm looking forward to having you. He offered Rhys his hand again for another handshake. She hesitated, staring warily for a second before she finally took it. When she looked back to his face, she noticed how his eyes sparkled. Claire rolled her eyes. She tried not to pay attention. She knew exactly how it would all play out. This new girl, like all the others, at least the pretty ones, would fall for Paul and use every trick in her arsenal to get his attention. Once he finished letting her entertain him, he would succumb to her wiles, and she would never know that his wiles were what landed her in his bed. Claire, this is Rhys, our new student. Claire didn't even pretend to be distracted from her work on her computer. Hello, Rhys. I'm glad you've come to Paradise Divers. We're excited you have chosen to join our family. It came out as enthusiastically as she could manage. Monotone. She'd said it a million times, and it grew harder and harder to sound like she meant it. Thank you. Rhys cleared her throat. Paul continued to stare. His right eye twitched, the gesture so slight Rhys brushed it off. It made her uncomfortable to think he'd wink at her when they just met. So, you want to get certified. We can get that done pretty fast, but you're here for 3 weeks, right? Once you've got your C card, you'll be hooked. If you could swing staying a little longer, we could work on your dive master certification, too. Paul watched her, still. She stared back, though it was becoming increasingly uncomfortable. She'd put her life into the hands of these people. The whole idea of diving scared her enough already, but she'd set a goal. As a generally easygoing, make-no-waves personality, she hadn't set many goals in her life, but once she did, she couldn't let it go. Her parents had called her stubborn, but only a time or two. Her determination in this case, she believed, was regrettable and poorly executed, and did nothing for her nausea. She lowered her head but raised her eyes to resume eye contact, looking up through her lashes, unwittingly revealing her moment of vulnerability. "I need to take this one step at a time." Paul stared as if he meant to say something, but nothing came out. He glanced down.
"Do you have a place to stay?"
he finally asked. "I have reservations at Strawberry Hill Estates." The sudden change in Paul's expression worried her, and Claire actually looked up from her computer. The name did make the place sound better than it was. She'd seen it.
"I think we can do better than that."
Paul winked, no doubt this time, with his left eye, and picked up a microphone.
"Tracy, I need you in the office."
In just a few seconds, a tall, big-boned girl wearing dark, heavy glasses poked her head into the office. Her long, stringy, and mousy brown hair fell to about her shoulders.
"I was just reading out on the deck. What did I do?"
She pushed her glasses up her nose. Paul grinned.
"You have a vacancy at your place, don't you?"
Tracy seemed relieved.
"Yes."
"Meet your new roommate. This is Reese."
Reese almost croaked. She couldn't believe he would make this type of arrangement without her consent. Even with the unbelievable third-world currency exchange rate, Reese needed to be careful with every cent.
"I have a pretty tight budget. Strawberry Hill is the only place I could afford..."
"Believe me, you'll fit in better at Tracy's. It's the nicest apartment on the island."
"Then for sure I can't."
His confidence radiated through his smile.
"Tracy, how much is your rent?"
$11.50 a night, split between Regina and I, but now there'll be three of us. There's still one more bed, too, so if we find one more person, that'll be four people to split the cost."
Tracy rambled, but Paul cut her off by ignoring the rest of what she said. He turned back to Reese.
"See, Strawberry is what, $3? For an extra 83 cents a night, you're going to be much happier, I promise."
This man, Paul, made her increasingly uncomfortable. The way he stared at her, made decisions for her. She didn't know if she should be grateful or creeped out.
"Tracy, show Reese where she'll be staying."
He stared again.
"Tomorrow morning, then. About noon? We'll get you started."
Okay.
Reese took a deep breath but managed to smile.
"Sorry, I'm a little nervous about all this."
"You're gonna love it."
He winked again. Or did he?
"It's nice to meet you."
Tracy didn't stop talking the whole way to her apartment. Reese learned every detail about every roommate Tracy had ever had, information Reese didn't feel the need to know when she really just wanted to ask how much farther they had to walk. She would have asked if Tracy had taken a breath. Reese started to wonder why they didn't take a taxi, and if it was much farther, she thought about how the added cost of taking a taxi every day would eat away at her tight budget. Once they finally arrived, relief swept over her. In spite of the extra cost, the added distance from the dive shop where she would be spending most of her time over the next few weeks, and her new talkative roommate, she didn't regret any of it after all. The place was cute, clean, and not at all scary. She felt a greater sense of gratitude toward the dive shop owner for steering her right. After getting off the plane, the taxi driver had dropped her off at Strawberry Hill. The rundown place had made her nervous. When she'd tried to check in, she found the office closed. Fortunately, the taxi driver sat parked in front, still watching and waiting, as if he worried about leaving her there. He'd suggested she head to the dive shop and had even offered to take her at no extra charge.
"Welcome to Oceanside," Tracy said.
"This isn't exactly at the ocean side, is it?" Reese laughed at the irony. The paved road ended at the front of the small complex and turned into a dirt path from that point. It seemed Oceanside sat on the fringe of town, with only jungle the rest of the way to the other side of the island. She liked the idea of living so close to all the trees. They stopped at the office, the landlord's home, and made all the arrangements for Reese to stay, and he handed her two keys. Reese followed Tracy along the narrow path, around a small private yard lined with flowering shrubs. She'd never seen grass like that before. From a distance, it looked nice, but up close, it didn't look like anything they had at home. She used to read on the lawn in her backyard, but she couldn't picture herself lying on the thick, sharp grass here. They reached a set of stairs and climbed up three flights to the top floor. Tracy kept talking and didn't bother to offer to help Reese with her heavy bag. Reese gratefully reminded herself she wouldn't have to drag her bag around every day. Reese held the screen door open while Tracy unlocked the padlock, the only means of keeping the apartment secure.
"Padlock?" Reese asked. "Third world country." Tracy gave her a knowing smile. "Everything's a bit crude here. Keeps things simple, though."
"Yeah, simple's a good way to describe it." They both giggled. The door opened up, and the only thing that came to mind was small. A very small living room lay ahead, with two doors immediately on the right. Both had padlocks, making Reese look at Tracy before they both broke into another laugh.
"That's your room."
Tracy tapped on the first door at a right angle to the apartment entrance. She tapped on the second door a foot away from the first. "Regina and I are in this one."
"Everything is so little." Reese huffed a quiet laugh. "From what I've seen, this is probably the biggest apartment on the island."
"Wow, really?" Reese laughed again. A small couch sat on the same wall as the bedrooms, while a window and a very small television sat on a very small coffee table at the end of the room. The wall on the other side of the room opened into the kitchen through a wide doorway, and a recliner sat in the corner behind the opened front door.
"Huh, it's cute. Small, but cute."
She wished she could think of another word than small, but nope. Reese left her bag at the door and walked into the kitchen. She immediately fell in love, especially with the round table sitting in the corner. Two large windows over the table let in more light than the smaller windows in the living room, while sheer white curtains fluttered gently in the breeze blowing through the screens. She couldn't wait to sit at the table and enjoy a cup of coffee in the mornings. The other half of the kitchen didn't quite match the picturesque ambiance of the corner where the table sat. The fridge made her smile. It had to be from the 50s, only about as tall as she was, with a rounded top and chrome handle. A single porcelain sink butted up to the left of the fridge, while a crude countertop ran from the sink around the room in a U-shape, dividing the room almost in half. Reese thought it funny that anyone could use so much counter space since there was nothing to cook on except one small hot plate against the wall. She'd never used one of those.
"No microwave?"
Tracy didn't seem to understand. "I guess there's going to be a bit of a learning curve. I'm not sure how to cook without a real stove, and especially a microwave." Other than the cooking setup, the charming apartment delighted her. She would have to be sure to thank Paul.
"Cook? Who cooks?"
"I like to cook," Reese said.
"Everyone here just eats out."
Reese unlocked the door of her room and pulled her bag inside. The L-shaped room wrapped around the bathroom in the far right corner. A full-sized bed sat against the left wall, next to a 2-foot-wide window, while a twin bed sat under an even smaller window on the right, looking out over the porch. Tracy didn't waste time opening the windows of the room, which had been shut up tight for a few weeks. She turned on the fan.
"I don't know why they don't use bigger windows throughout the apartment," Tracy said. "It gets pretty stuffy. No air conditioning. Electricity here is expensive and isn't very reliable. You want to run the fan and hope they don't have another blackout whenever you're home. That's why Regina and I aren't home very often. We spend the majority of our time at the shop, or we hang out at the bar, anywhere we can find a breeze."
Reese took note and continued to look around. Her nesting instincts had already kicked in as she made plans for where to put her things. There was a narrow table with the same formica as the kitchen counters, attached to the wall that divided the bathroom from the right side of the room, but no closet in sight.
"Where do I keep my clothes?"
"Clothes? No one needs lots of clothes here. We all just live in our swimming suits most of the time. We throw on a t-shirt and shorts when we leave the shop."
"If I take out the dive gear, I guess I can just use my bag as a place to store my things. Oh, shoot, I should have left my dive gear at the shop. Now I'll have to drag it all back."
"You have your own gear? You must be rich. Even I don't have my own gear."
Reese laughed. "I'm anything but rich."
"That stuff costs a fortune. Everyone uses shop's gear, even Regina and I. It's easier, less hassle. We don't want to give anyone a reason to be jealous."
"Jealous for having my own gear?"
Reese felt her face flush, having doubts about this again. So far, she'd done just about everything wrong and wondered if it was a sign that she'd made a big mistake. Tracy smiled.
Don't worry about it. They'll get over it.
Well, if I stick to my budget, I have enough money to stay for 3 weeks. Then I have to go back home and figure out what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. I'll always have my gear as proof that I did this. Besides, I'm a bit of a germaphobe. I can't imagine putting a regulator in my mouth when I don't know whose mouth sucked on it before. A tiny black girl walked through the front door.
I heard we have a new roommate.
She noticed Reese and looked her over quite thoroughly. You must be Regina. Reese offered a smile as she noted the huge camera hanging from Regina's neck.
We will get along just fine as long as you understand that the beer in the fridge, it belongs to me, Regina said, wagging her finger at Reese. You cannot never have any, so don't ask. Don't take any thinking you will pay me back, 'cause no one ever does, and I would rather have my beer in the fridge than 1,000,000 promises to buy me more.
Okay, Reese said. I don't really drink. I don't think it'll be a problem. Regina spoke with an accent that Reese didn't recognize. Her English was only a little off. She enunciated each word a little more distinctly and accentuated different syllables than an American would. Almost everyone here has an accent. Am I the only American on this island? Reese asked with a nervous laugh.
You guys have accents. I don't, Tracy said. But North Americans are a minority here. Pirates settled the island, so there are a lot of whites here, but they've been here forever. There are a lot of descendants of slaves, too. Surprisingly, there aren't many mainlanders. The islanders don't really like them coming over, except on holiday.
Paul is North American. He's from Miami, Florida.
Regina suddenly acted nervous about sounding a little too much like an authority on Paul. She, to hide her self-imposed unease about possibly knowing so much about him, added,
I think the man running Island Divers is North American, too.
Ray is North American, Tracy added. He runs the best restaurant on the island.
Reese listened as they discussed how few there were, making her feel more out of place than she already did.
Where are you from?
I'm from Leeds, Tracy said. England. That is none of your business, Regina snapped.
Don't mind her. She's a princess that had to escape from her country. She can't tell anyone where she's from because she's worried the rebels might still be looking for her.
Tracy! Regina yelled. You cannot never keep your mouth shut, can you? I wish I never tell you these things.
She's our roommate.
Tracy glanced at Reese, hoping to remedy her blunder.
We can trust you, right?
Yeah, I promise. I'll never mention it to anyone. Reese wondered if they were playing some sort of initiation joke on her. She wished she remembered her geography and world history better.
Did Paul get a look at her? Regina asked Tracy.
Yes, he's going to want her. Real bad.
Tracy acted excited.
Of course, I figured that the second I saw her.
Regina didn't seem very excited.
Lucky girl.
They both looked Reese over.
What are you talking about? Reese asked.
Regina looked Reese over once more.
What? Tell me, Reese demanded.
Paul.
What about him?
Regina and Tracy looked at each other and smiled. There was a bit of jealousy in their tone as they announced,
He's going to sleep with you.
Oh, no, he's not. It came out sharply. Tracy and Regina looked at each other again.
Are you crazy? They said in unison.
You noticed how beautiful that man is, right? Every woman on this island would kill to be you right now. Shelley is going to be hard to live with for a while.
I didn't notice.
Reese thought again about how she never noticed that kind of thing. Other girls always seemed to go on and on about how guys they'd seen once were so good-looking. All of her crushes, all three of them, had just kind of sneaked up on her. It wasn't until after she got to know a guy that she would suddenly realize how cute he was. I don't care what he looks like. I am not sleeping with him. I don't sleep with anyone. The room fell silent. Regina and Tracy stared at Reese with their mouths hanging open. Reese closed her eyes, knowing she'd said too much.
Are you?
Regina asked. You're a virgin, Tracy gasped.
"Holy shit," they said in unison.
After a few seconds of silence, Tracy asked, "Just how old are you?"
24. Why?
Reese was starting to feel awkward. She'd never been confronted about it before.
"'Cause you're plenty old enough, plenty cute enough. Why not?"
"Because I made a decision that I wasn't going to do that until I married. There's never been a reason to change my mind." They were both dumbfounded for several seconds. Regina broke the silence first.
"No one can know this. Reese, this is something you do not want anyone on this island to know about."
"Well, it's not like I advertise it. Hello, I'm Reese, and I'm a virgin."
She mocked how silly the idea sounded. "You guys just went on and on about how I was going to be with Paul, but I'm not. I'm not going to have sex with him or anyone else here, anywhere. That is something I'm saving until I have a ring on my finger and a formal legal promise that the man I give it to really loves me." Reese hung her head, knowing her opinion on the subject was old-fashioned. She'd never had to defend her position so strongly before. She was from Orem, Utah. She'd known a few girls who were brave enough to admit to losing their virginity, but she was under the impression that she was in no way a minority. Saving oneself for marriage seemed to be the socially acceptable thing to do. Chastity was a virtue, the norm. Most of her friends were either virgins or liars. She waited for them to ridicule her. No one said anything.
"I'm guessing by your reaction, I don't know what it's like here, but where I come from, my attitude about this is actually common."
Still, not a word from either of them. "I am not the only virgin left in the world," she said anxiously. Regina moved closer and put her hands on Reese's shoulders to get her attention.
"I am serious. You listen to me. It may be normal in the culture where you are coming from, but there are other cultures in this world, too. Cultures that..." She shook her head. "There are people who pay fortunes to buy pretty white virgin girls like you. Do you understand what I am trying to say to you?"
"Say to you," Tracy corrected Regina.
Regina gave her a look, but continued.
"There are too many stupid men out there. Some of them think that if they have a virgin, it will cure their disease. There are men who keep track of the virgins they have had, simply because they think it is a symbol of their masculinity parts. There are people, men, from all over this world on this one little island."
Regina was shaking her head.
"This is very dangerous information, almost as dangerous as my secrets. No one else can know about this."
She stared intently into Reese's eyes, as if trying to will her to take her seriously. Reese opened her mouth to say something, but shut it again.
"Tracy!"
Regina let go of Reese's shoulders. She turned to Tracy and yelled,
"No one can know about this. Do you understand? For once in your stupid, big-mouth life, no one."
Chapter 2 Reese's first day at the shop went well. She wasn't due to show up until later, but she followed her roommates at 7:30 because she didn't know what else to do with herself, and she didn't think she could find her way back to the shop on her own. She filled out the paperwork, she received her books and worksheets, and her instructor introduced herself. Shelley, an instructor in training, assigned her to read the first four chapters of the Open Water, Learn to Dive book by the next day. Four chapters at a time meant the course really would go fast. The thought made Reese's stomach do a flip. As soon as she finished the bookwork, it would be time to get in the water. She took a deep breath and let it out slowly to calm her nerves. She told herself over and over not to give up now. Everyone at the shop seemed impressed with her gear, and as Tracy had predicted, a few were possibly jealous. Claire, in a detached, business-like manner, showed her around, explaining where things went and the penalties if she were to get caught putting anything in the wrong place.
"The students get lazy and think it won't hurt to put this here or that there just this once."
The inflection in her voice changed to mock the other people at the shop. Reese began to realize the students were a constant annoyance to her, and she wondered how long it would take before Claire lumped her in with the rest of them. "How many students are there?" Reese finally dared to ask. "I'm having trouble distinguishing who works here and who the other students are."
"Paul owns the place."
Reese detected a hint of resentment in Claire's tone.
"Randy's the boat captain. I manage the office. Dobbs is Paul's right hand, an instructor and my husband. Mitch is also an instructor, but I honestly don't understand why Paul keeps him on the payroll. The man's a bloody muppet. Nice, but a bit daft. Everyone else pays for the abuse."
Claire laughed as if being sarcastic, but Reese wasn't really sure. Claire was fairly pretty, and though she was only a little older than the average person at the shop, she came across more like a mother figure. She wore her ash blonde hair in what would be a bob cut, but with unruly waves. Claire spent most of the day in the office, and no one questioned the orders she gave in her British accent and cynical tone of voice. Reese had the impression she wasn't the only one a little intimidated by Claire.
"You can put your BCD on this rack with the others. Your reg goes on those hooks."
She pointed to all the regulators hanging on pegs on the other side of the room. Paul appeared from the deck and walked through the gear room toward the office. As he walked by, he told Claire he didn't want Reese to mix her gear in with the shop's. Claire didn't seem to think it strange that he knew what she'd been saying before he even entered the room.
"Just where do you suggest she keep it, then?" Claire snapped. "I'm not a magician. We're bursting at the seams here, and I can't pull a bigger storage room out of my ass."
Reese didn't like Paul escalating Claire's already bad attitude when she still had to spend time with her. She couldn't tell if he was concerned someone else might try to use her equipment and he didn't want the confusion, or that it might get stolen.
"Put it in the closet with mine."
He walked out the door and into a short hallway they called the tunnel and turned right into the office, leaving Claire with her mouth hanging open.
"That's a first. I've never seen him offer his private closet to anyone."
Claire had a thoughtful look on her face for a second, and then slowly turned to look at Reese.
"Ah, bugger. I think that makes you one of the special ones, Duck. Surprise!"
she muttered under her breath and turned her attention back to the business at hand, leaving Reese feeling a little dazed about what just happened. Reese spent the day lounging on the deck, watching everyone and reading her assignment 3 times. That morning, the deck bustled with what seemed like organized chaos before the dives. Randy, the boat captain, Dobbs, and 6 of the 14 students boarded the boat with gear and tanks and pulled away from the dock before Randy hit the throttle and they raced south. The boat came back about 3 hours later, and again, everyone seemed to know exactly what to do. Docking the boat, dismantling gear, rinsing gear, schlepping tanks, and putting everything away. Reese began to wonder about when she would be expected to join in and if anyone would show her what to do first. She hated how insecure she always felt. She reminded herself that was why she was here. Once the dives and the work associated with it were done, things seemed pretty laid back at the shop, except for the way everyone tried to stay out of Paul and Claire's way. The shop had no real structure in the afternoon. Even the lessons were casual. Students sat in the rectangular gazebo on the deck and listened to their instructors or ran through verbal tests with each other. Others read their own assignments, watched instruction videos in the media room, or just sat around talking. The favorite activity at the shop seemed to be logging dives and going through the shop's ocean wildlife books. People sat at the tables under the gazebo for hours, discussing their dives or trying to identify the creatures they saw while diving that morning. There were several mats rolled up and stowed in the eaves of the gazebo that students would pull out and sleep on, right on the deck. Throughout the day, it seemed, almost everyone took a long nap at some point. As the day wore on, the deck began to look like a slumber party, everyone choosing to sleep there where the breeze was best, instead of going home to their stuffy apartments. The 2 hammocks hanging between posts on the side of the shop near the office, right on the edge of the dock, stayed occupied most of the afternoon as well. Reese didn't see herself ever trying one out. She'd never been a competent hammock sleeper, and she pictured herself falling out of it and into the water below. She couldn't picture herself using any of the mats, either. not with all the perspiration stains on them from years of one after another stranger's use. She couldn't allow herself to even think about it without wanting a shower. Almost everyone at the shop made it a point to welcome her. Some were friendlier than others. Several more girls told her that Paul would want her, as if she should be flattered. She followed Regina's advice by not giving away her sexual status again, but she didn't know what she was supposed to say. She opted to play it modestly. "A man that good-looking," she said, using their words, "would never be interested in someone as plain as me." She began to be able to distinguish between the girls he had been with and the ones he hadn't. The ones she guessed he'd slept with seemed to want to believe her, while the girls who fit into the not-his-type category enthusiastically insisted she was wrong. "You'll see," they told her. Tracy, always nearby, made sure Reese knew the life story of each and every person she talked to. More importantly, to Tracy anyway, which girls Paul had been with and which ones he would never be with, including Regina and herself. Reese had guessed right almost every time, but she would have preferred it if her roommate would stop throwing out so much information. She didn't know Tracy well enough yet to dare to ask her to stop. It was her first day. She'd be living with a girl for 3 weeks, and Reese hated confrontations and hurting people's feelings, something she only did if she was very upset, which she almost never was, and she always regretted it afterward.
"So, have you still not noticed how good-looking Paul is?" Tracy asked with a smirk.
"Okay, I admit it. He's cute," Reese smiled, "but I prefer a more clean-cut businessman look. Paul's a bit scruffy for me, so you and all the other female students can take me off the list of competition." Tracy groaned, refusing to believe her. Reese almost felt bad about her attempt to use Tracy's lack of gab filters to help her cause, but she didn't doubt word would get around quickly, and all the girls would stop talking about Paul getting it on with her. She shuddered at the thought.
"See that pole, about 30 meters out there in the water?" Tracy asked.
Most of the people on the island used the metric system, and Reese found it hard to adjust. The pole Tracy pointed to looked to be about 100 feet away, a good reference, which Reese committed to memory.
"It's attached to a block of cement under the water," she leaned down and whispered. "Paul takes girls out there, and they do it," she giggled.
"Right there? But everyone can see." Reese couldn't have been more shocked.
"Not really. You can tell, kind of, but it's far enough away you can't really hear or see anything. But knowing Paul and the way he is, you just know. That's why everyone calls it frock."
"Frock?
Effing rock, you know?"
Tracy giggled again and leaned in to say the word without the code name. Reese felt her face growing hotter. She had the feeling Tracy wished she could give a first-hand account of her own experience on frock with Paul.
"Sometimes he just uses the bathroom," she giggled again. "Of course he uses the bathroom, but I mean for sex."
"You know what, Tracy?" Reese was beginning to feel upset. "I really don't want to know any of this."
"But you should know, just in case."
Tracy eyed her, sure she would change her mind. Reese put her hands over her ears and gave Tracy a bug-eyed look to assure her it wasn't going to happen. Hearing the constant predictions of her imminent destiny with Paul over and over again freaked her out. She found herself looking his direction, a lot, too much. Every now and then, she found him watching her, too. He would smile, and she would, more from an ingrained sense of courtesy and habit, smile back, but hurry to look away, as she imagined him undressing her with his eyes. She'd never had a man after her, not just for that. She'd never thought much about it before, but now, the first time she'd been so personally confronted by it, she couldn't stop thinking about it. She felt sick.
"How's the new place?"
Paul sneaked up on Reese as she sat on the deck, going over the questions at the end of the second chapter. She'd finally been able to get him off her mind and stop sneaking peeks at him over the top of her book. It took her a minute to gather her senses enough to talk.
"It's so cute. It's perfect. I figure I'll have to skip a few meals a week to afford it, but I really like it. Thank you."
"Good. I didn't think it would do to have you staying at Strawberry Hill."
Paul sat down next to her and leaned toward her so their shoulders touched. She nervously leaned away. He stared at her a second, and then he looked down. He reminded her of a shy little boy, or a wolf in sheep's clothing. All the things people had said about him were right back in her head again. It hadn't taken her long to figure out why all the girls thought of him as the most beautiful man in the world. All the stolen glances she'd cast his direction had helped, but at the moment, he looked sweet and almost vulnerable, nothing like the sex hound everyone made him out to be. She found it hard to believe all the gossip. Other than his attempts to check her out too, he'd done nothing to make her believe all the other girls. But what did she know? Where there's smoke, there's fire. The words popped into her head. Her mom always said she didn't like gossip, but when the same thing keeps going around about someone, you shouldn't judge people, but that doesn't mean you should throw discernment out the window either. That's why we have brains, Reese. It's better to be safe than sorry, she'd warned. Paul was tall. She guessed 6'2" or 6'3". She had yet to see him wear more than just his swimming trunks, so it was easy to see he was in great shape. Muscular, but not the football player or bodybuilder kind of muscle. He didn't have an ounce of fat on his body, so his toned muscles were just hard to miss, each and every one of them, everywhere. Yes, Paul was good-looking enough. His face balanced nicely between the chiseled, rugged features of the stereotypical movie star handsome, while being just soft enough to make him feel approachable. He wore his light brown hair with natural, sun-kissed highlights, shoulder length, slightly curly, and kind of shaggy, but it all somehow stayed tucked behind his ears on the sides while his sideburns blended into the scruffy beard on his face. Cute, but not her type, Reese reminded herself.
That's a pretty swimming suit. Very unique, Paul said, looking her over.
Thanks. Reese had been feeling out of place about her swimming suit all morning. All the other girls wore bikinis, even the heavier girls who she thought might look better if they weren't showing so much skin. Darn Utah. Everyone at home wore modest swimming suits. Tankinis and one-piece swimsuits were the norm. She brought three to the island, and not one bikini, as if she would dare to wear one anyway. I was worried I looked weird compared to everyone else. She wondered why she'd said it and wanted to kick herself. She always pointed out her faults, making sure no one missed them.
Maybe that's what I like about you. You're different.
He put his hand on her back in a reassuring gesture, but she tensed up and jerked away.
Are you all right?
He asked. Yes, she squeaked. She cleared her throat, but she couldn't relax. She told herself to calm down before he realized she was crazy. But then she thought that might be a good thing. He wouldn't want to sleep with a crazy girl. Even after he removed his hand, she could still feel his handprint on her skin. She couldn't get her nerves to settle.
It's normal to be a little nervous about diving, Paul said. I think nerves keeps us sharp, safe. They remind us to respect the sport, respect the ocean. But you're going to be okay. I haven't lost a student yet.
He chuckled and then turned his gaze to the ocean. He looked back with a warm smile.
If you'd like, I could take you out to do a discovery dive tonight, after the shop closes. Do you know what that is?
She shook her head.
I can take people who aren't certified for a one-time diving experience, just to see if they like it. It gives them an opportunity to see if they want to go ahead before plunking down all their money to get certified. You'd be perfectly safe. I wouldn't leave your side.
She stared at him, not knowing what to say. She thought a discovery dive sounded great. Just the thing she needed to get over her fears. But the thought of being alone with him scared her to death. Everyone's been telling me I have to eat at Ray's tonight. She was grateful to have what sounded like a good excuse.
Oh, yeah, Wednesday.
He looked out over the ocean again. He seemed disappointed. He turned back and his right eye did the almost wink thing.
Well, I guess I'll just have to get you wet later then.
Yeah, that would be good.
That's why I'm here.
She tried to sound convincing, to herself as well as Paul. His eyes grew wide with amusement, and he grinned. He winked for sure with his left eye. I'd hate to think I spent the last of my money, on a dream I chickened out on. He got up and left, but Regina didn't waste time getting to her.
What are you doing?
She glanced around the deck like a secret agent, making sure no one could tell what they were talking about.
You act like an idiot every time Paul gets close to you. Someone is going to start wondering why. The way you tense up, just speaking to that man?
I can't help it. I didn't know what to do. Reese leaned into Regina and whispered,
He offered to take me on a discovery dive. He's trying to get me alone.
Regina stared at her blankly.
He wants to jump them bones of yours, but that doesn't make him a rapist. You need to chill. He is going to try to charm you into that bed of his, not knock you out and hop on.
Reese blushed, absorbing the shame her roommate dished out. It wasn't just Paul. Reese always got nervous around touchy men. So how should I act then?
Grow up and stop acting like a stupid 13-year-old schoolgirl. Regina marched off. Act normal.
Normal. Somehow, I missed that subject in school, Reese said under her breath. She sighed. She'd thought things were complicated in Utah. She'd always imagined growing up in Utah was similar to living on an alien planet. She'd dreamed of getting away from it, but the island was turning out to be more complicated than anything she'd ever experienced. I'm not Utahian enough for Utah, but I'm too Utahian for the rest of the world.
Chapter 3 Reese followed Tracy and Regina to Ray's for dinner, where they met up with most of the dive shop crew. According to everyone, Ray served the best food on the island, but he only opened on Wednesday and Saturday nights. The students at the shop never entertained any thought of eating anyplace else on Wednesdays. She stood back from the counter in the outdoor restaurant and looked over the menu while the others stepped up to place their orders. There were only three options scribbled on a chalkboard, and the cost was higher than she expected. She wondered why everyone thought this was the must-eat place. Here 24 hours and I've already blown my budget. At this rate, I'll be going home in a week. She laughed at herself for worrying about spending literally pennies more than she'd anticipated, but it would still become a problem in the end if she didn't find a way to be more careful. She ordered the chicken and followed her new friends to a table.
We're lucky to find seats together, Tracy said. This place fills up fast.
Reese couldn't see many empty chairs. The three of them were seated at a large table with others from the dive shop crowd. Krista, one of the girls at the table, gasped.
Paul cut his hair, and he's clean-shaven.
Reese looked to see for herself as the other girls chattered on about Paul's new look. The guys at the table seemed to tolerate the discussion as though discussing Paul happened often and they were used to it. When Reese's gaze found him, their eyes met. One of the corners of his mouth hitched up slightly, timidly, until she smiled back to be friendly. His smile grew to mammoth proportions, making his eyes sparkle, but then he looked away when he stepped up to the counter to place his order. She thought the haircut a definite improvement, even if some of the other girls disagreed. The hair over his ears, now gone to a more businessman style, but the hair on top still had enough length to allow his waves to do their thing. He appeared to be a wash-and-towel-dry guy, no styling, but it worked on him. With longer hair, she hadn't noticed his cowlick. The hair on his forehead on the right side of his face swept up naturally. She'd known one kid in elementary with a cowlick and it made him look goofy. Paul's cowlick didn't look goofy at all. It was, she rolled her eyes that she would think it, endearing. She'd never seen him in clothes. He wore jeans and brown leather flip-flops with a white button-up shirt, the sleeves rolled up. His shark-tooth necklace lay against the base of his throat, where his shirt opened to his chest. His shirt tails hung over his waist, accentuating his broad shoulders and long torso. She tried, but didn't do a very good job of not looking his way as he ordered his food. He turned and headed toward their table with not just one beer, but one in each hand. She felt him staring at her again. Back home, under normal circumstances, she would be flattered to have a man as good-looking as Paul paying attention to her. At home, it wouldn't mean what everyone here had adequately convinced her it meant. Knowing the reality of here made her want to get up and run out. People crowded around the table, leaving no empty chairs. Paul would have to sit somewhere else, and she felt relieved to know she wouldn't have to worry about what he would say to her all through dinner, waiting for him to ask her to. She would have missed it had she not been watching at the right moment, but Paul looked the guy sitting next to her in the eye. She tried to remember his name. Eddie. Some kind of unspoken communication passed between the two of them.
I just remembered I have a question for Dobbs. I think I'll go eat with him and Claire,
Eddie said, jumping up. He grabbed his drink and left, leaving the chair next to Reese vacant. Paul sat down and guzzled half his first beer. Reese blushed as she noticed a few raised eyebrows around the table. She squirmed and fidgeted with her drink. Surely the socializing thing came so naturally to everyone except her. Being the new girl was hard enough, without adding the fact that everyone acted like a pack of wolves, waiting for Paul to go in for the kill. His arrival became excruciatingly awkward, given what he apparently wanted to do to her. And she still didn't know how everyone knew his intentions. He'd been nothing but kind. Her nerves grew increasingly raw, not knowing what to expect. Dinner on the island lasted hours. All the restaurants notoriously took their time, and everyone just grew to accept it as the norm, using the time to socialize and drink. Reese quietly listened to the conversation, trying to learn more about everyone. Paul picked up her drink and studied it, trying to recognize her choice. "What are you drinking?" he asked, louder than necessary, drawing everyone's attention. "Lemonade," Reese answered, wondering why he seemed so concerned about it.
"Lemonade?"
He didn't even try to hide what he thought of her choice.
"Are you a recovering alcoholic?"
"No," Reese looked around the table. Everyone else had some form of alcohol as their choice of beverage. "Good." Paul caught the waitress's attention on her way to take food to another table. He asked for a shot of vodka and two more beers. Paul teased and refused to give Reese her glass back when she tried to grab it. Everyone laughed. The waitress brought the drinks he ordered, and Paul gulped her lemonade down until her glass was half empty. He winced, stuck out his tongue, and rattled his head like shaking off something nasty.
"Lemonade?"
He tilted his head sideways and glanced at her from the corner of his eye, letting her and everyone else know how disappointed he was with her choice. With a smile on his face, he poured the shot of vodka into her glass before she could snatch it from him.
"What are you doing? I'm not a big drinker."
Too late. Her overactive imagination got the best of her. Her limbs felt weak, and she worried she might start trembling any second. Sure, he was trying to get her drunk so he could have his way with her. Paul then poured one of the beers into the lemonade, filling the glass to the top again, and he stirred it with her straw. He took a sip and smacked his lips deliberately, judging the results of his concoction. He gulped down a little more and replaced it again with more beer. He tasted it once more and finally handed it back to her.
"Now you have a real drink."
She forgot all about his nasty intentions toward her, as suddenly, more than anything else, there was one thing on her mind. "His slobber is all over my drink." Everyone snickered. She realized he was just having a little fun at her expense, testing the new girl, and she knew how uptight it would make her look if she didn't play along. But she had real issues with germs. He raised her glass to her again, an expectant grin on his face, emphasizing he wanted her to taste his creation. He looked too cute to be the devil.
"Drink, drink, drink,"
everyone started chanting, making Reese feel the need to be a good sport. "You have to drink if you want to fit in on this island," Krista said. "It's the national pastime."
"Yeah, drinking and diving,"
Petter said, which elicited more laughter.
"Don't try this at home."
"Maybe I should get my money back. The travel brochure said nothing about that." Reese forced a smile. She didn't want to appear to be lacking a sense of humor. She'd only been on the island 2 days, first impressions and all. She glanced around to see everyone watching expectantly, laughing and speculating amongst themselves. She timidly took the glass from Paul's hand. She stared at it, working hard to ignore all the germs she imagined swimming around in her drink. She swirled the straw again, hoping to spread them around and dilute them a little more. She used the opportunity to wipe as much of the straw with her fingers as possible. She took a deep breath and forced herself to take a sip. It took a few seconds to actually swallow. Maybe that made it worse, but too late now. The look on her face must have given her away.
"You look sick," Tracy said. "I'm fine,"
Reese said, stretching her lips into another tight smile. She closed her eyes, wondering how to get out of this. She had to banter back. She racked her brain to think of a clever comeback. Nothing. Until she saw the look on Regina's face and the other girls' expressions, too. They all stared, envious of her as if they would give anything to be in her place, having Paul showering his attention on them. Well, he waited for her verdict. She creased her brow and made herself appear to be having a hard time deciding something. I'm not sure.
Oh?
Now Paul looked confused. That helped. I don't have enough information. I need to do a little research. She set the glass down, took another deep breath, leaned in, and placed her lips lightly on his. She meant to give him one quick, dry peck for show, but he not only accepted her kiss, he leaned into her as she pulled away, making it last longer, making it look more like a hot-blooded kiss by giving her some tongue. She pulled back, breaking contact, probably a little too abruptly, considering she initiated the stunt. Paul and Reese stared at each other, shock on her face, a look of something on his. Someone whistled. One of the men cheered. A girl's voice said, "Damn it, not another one," in a hushed tone. Others leaned forward in their seats, waiting to see what came next, but no one seemed too surprised. Tracy and Regina watched, but didn't give Reese anything to help. She did what she thought necessary and shook it off, moving forward with her original joke. She deliberately licked her lips, smacking them. More germs, but she couldn't stop now. She looked up through squinted eyes, took another sip of her drink, and licked her lips again, still thinking. Thinking she was about to die, but she couldn't let anyone know. It's delicious all right, but I don't think it's the alcohol that makes it so good. She glanced back at Paul. It's definitely the backwash. He stared at her. His right eye twitched faintly until he finally cast his eyes down with a shy grin on his face. "Aw, that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me," he said humbly, and everyone laughed. He leaned down and whispered in her ear, "You're funny." "Germs are no laughing matter to me," she whispered back. The look on his face registered surprise at how serious she'd turned,